This is a continuation of an interview with Mr. Kenner Harmon. This is side two on the first of two tapes done on July 12,
1978. Well, went right along, man, it's cold out. So, Maggie, crazy. The first thing that slipped out is two on the floor. Well, that first one, that wig, that tail end of their bunch, you know, got up and he turned all our side down. I got to do. Well, I said to myself, I'll turn you down and I'll die on that floor. I stepped out in, and Mr. Mann, our teacher, he told that iceberg, you know him? I could understand it. Well, he pronounced word or two and he let us go again. My opponent stumbled and I had him. I went through them just like they had went through us. Well, Maggie, the opposition, first, one after the captain, was a third-class school teacher, Al Lambert. Well, I turned everything up down, up to Al, and he stepped out. I was 10 years old at that time, but I knew the spelling book by heart. And I knew Uncle Jolly Lane. I knew what he could do. So Al and me, we took it for about 30 minutes. Uncle John, he let us go against one, and Al, he stumbled and I had him. Well, Uncle John said, Al, are you satisfied now? He said, no, I'm not. Said, all right, line up again. We lined up. And it happened just like it did before. That bird at the end of the line turned everything down up to me. But we didn't have any good spellers, much for all our big boys. Dear Devil and Albert and Fraser boys and Leslie boys and all, they were working on the road. Well, Al and me took it again. Bert Van Horn had turned all of us down up to me again. So Al and me took about 30 minutes or something like that, and I laid him again. He said, now are you satisfied, Al? He said, yes, I'm satisfied. We didn't study very many subject, Mr. Kerr, but we were good on the ones that we studied, you know. That spelling book, that old McGuffey spelling book, why, that thing I do that thing to heart. Reading and writing. writing and arithmetic and history was about all that we, the only subject that we had at that time. And of course, later on, they conducted history and physiology and all that stuff was added later on. We had some great time. Every Friday evening, we'd have a staying night. And then we'd still two on the floor, you know. And golly, when you went out there, it was either produce or get the fever. Yes, sir. And those liveries that we used to have, they were the funniest things you ever saw. We'd have those subjects for debate, you know, and we'd, a lot of the grown-ups would take sides, and then we'd have select reading. And essays. And spelling that. And 1899, I think it was. I had a subject for an essay. Entitled Newcomb. Well, I explained how many people lived on Newcomb at that time. It was about 150. Now I don't guess it's 10 people. Not over 10 or 15. Well, it was named after a man by the name of Newcomb, a weird that's on there. So I went ahead and explained it. Along about that time, the novel by Marie Carell came out. Thelma was the name of that. So I did it. So in this history, people, I stated that people have gone into that over the land of the midnight sun. That was Norway, you know. But that is nothing to compare with Newcomb, the land of the midnight moon. Well, I ended that up. Newcomb, lovely land. Home of the bathing sea. In vain we search Big Sandy Strand to find a place like this. Well, Newcomb at that time was a sort of an educational center. Jay Banner, he lived there. Was born and lived on, and he was a good educator, and he would hold these what we call winter schools, you know, and so people from different places would come. It was more of a normal stew, you know, that she thought. And so all of his students were pretty well educated. But he saw that they studied. He'd make them study. But now, there might be two of the younger ones that I went to school with at Newton. I think there's two of them still a living that was a whole lot younger than I was. And one at Paul's, I guess. I think there's one lady that lives in Ashland that I went to school with. She's still a living, I think. Might be one or two more, but so far as I know, she's the only one that's living.
Mm-hmm.
All my boyhood friends, they all gone.
When did your family first come to Kentucky?
I guess.
When did your family first come to Kentucky?
Well, along about, I reckon it was 17, along about 17 and 20, or something like that. My ancestors were born in Germany. So they migrated to the Isle of Man, an island between Ireland and England. From that, there they migrated to near Philadelphia. And my grandfather, Daniel Harmon, was born in Pennsylvania, near Philadelphia. Well, they came from that Virginia. And settled in Virginia, which then owned Kentucky as part of Virginia. So they moved from Virginia over to the Big Sandy River, which was then in Virginia. And my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, was born in Pennsylvania in 1729. My great-grandfather was born in Virginia in 1769. My grandfather, Adam Harmon, was born on Big Sandy River near Middle Creek in 1799. So, my great-grandfather, he owned a big lot of land there. So, along about 1860, my father was born in Floyd County, Kentucky, in 1843. Along about 1860, my grandfather, Adam, moved to Lawrence County. Bought a farm over here on Blaine and settled there and died there in 1883, the year I was born. I was the last grandchild he ever saw. Mm-hmm. I was born on January the 29th, 1883, and he died in February, the next month, I said. And he's buried over there in our cemetery. We've got a cemetery over there. Mm-hmm. Well, he had a lot of children, grandfather and grandmother. He married a Hogan, Lodi Hogan. And the oldest girl, Rebecca, she married a fellow by the name of Goble. Well, Nancy, she married a fellow by the name of Sam Steens. Rosanna, she married Juan Gerald. Rachel, she married Juan Nico. And later on, after his death, a Wiley Nico. After his death, she married William Webb. And these Nichols and Webbs, they moved to Kansas and Oklahoma and out in there. I think some of their descendants are out there yet. And Aunt Susan, she died unmarried. Aunt Margaret married George Shortage, and most of them are dead now. All of her children are. Aunt Letitia, she married James Short, and she was the youngest of the girls. The boys, Uncle Daniel, he married Louise Elkins. And they had a bunch of children, Adam and Mary and Susan and Maggie and Van Dorn. Well, Uncle Anderson, he married Letitia Keith in 1858, and they went to Kansas, and we lost track of them. But just a few years ago, I had some correspondence with some people up here at Big Sandy, and they told me that they had contact with some of these Western people. So I asked them to see if they could get any information about whatever become of Anderson Harmon. That I understood went to Kansas in 1858 as a man in a piece of teeth. Well, it wasn't but 2 days. I was received a letter from Antlers, Oklahoma, from an attorney by the name of Joe Stamper. He said Anderson Harmon was my great-grandfather. Well, I had a lot of correspondence with him, and he and his wife and daughter come here to see us. I took him over. He wanted to see the cemetery, and I took him over there. He's an attorney in Antlers, Oklahoma. I'm the last grandchild that Adam Harmon ever saw, and the last one that's a lady.
When I talked to you the last time, when I talked to you before, you mentioned something about Jenny Wiley. Do you know about Jenny Wiley?
Well, these Harmon boys, you know, they were my great-grandfather Daniel, you know, and Uncle Henry and Uncle Matthias among them. They were great hunters and Indian fighters, you know. And so they settled that place up there that they called Jenny Wiley, you know, Jenny Wiley State Park. And Matthias and Henry and great-granddaddy, they all lived around there and lived on that. Matthias did, and this Tom Wiley, Jenny Wiley's husband, he lived as a renter on Matthias' land. So they hated Matthias. He killed so many of them, you know, and they could shoot him with an arrow, and he'd never flinch. Probably he had buckskin clothes on or something. Anyhow, he wasn't flinch. So they got to considering him a sort of a spirit, you know. If he shot an eye into him, maybe he'd be a plow. Tired he's done with him, you know. He'd just kill an Indian. So, in order to get revenge on him, they made a raid. The Indians did. And by mistake, it ended up with the old Tom Wiley cabin in the place of Matthias. And they captured Jenny and killed most of the children, all except the baby, I think, and pulled out with her. Well, they come out on down Big Sandy. Cross up to this side of Louisiana by swimming. I guess they helped her swim. She might have been a swimmer herself, I don't know. Anyhow, they come to this side and took that ridge between Sher and Big Sandy River, way down through there. About the head of Cabot Street. The ridge was located, and they went on down there till they come to Little Sandy River down there in Greenham County. Well, some of them out here, they swam the river and went ahead about their business, going back to Chillicothe High. But they some stayed with old Jimmy, and they stayed on this side of that little Sandy River and headed back into the hill. Well, they located a rock cliff, a sort of a rock house. Well, they stayed in that for a while. Then they moved again to another rock house. And in the meantime, Jimmy had to skin all the deer and whatever they killed, raise the corn patches and all that stuff. Her baby had died. I think some of these Indians put it on a ship, put it afloat in the stream there, and said it'd make a great warrior if it didn't scream, and it screamed, and so they either drowned or they put it to death. Anyhow, it died.